Now, to show our gratitude, we're not going to be like the other guys and jerk you around and bullshit you. We're going to tell you the truth.
Shane Douglas is the man who ignites the new flame of the sport of professional wrestling. The era of the franchise. The era of the ECW.
South Connection podcast listeners, welcome back into the most extreme three-way dance, the most extreme menage a trois violence you'll ever experience. I'm JT, along with Jenny and D'Amato for the Extreme Three-Way Dance podcast. Welcome in as always, guys. How are you doing?
Good. How you doing on your birthday?
Oh, kayfabe.
Nah, never.
No, no kayfabe.
Okay. We don't do that here.
No. Well, I couldn't think of a better way to spend my first night as a 40-year-old man with you guys, so happy to be here. John,
hopefully we'll make it a December to remember for you.
Always do. You always do. It was a good day. Eventful last couple weeks. Received some cool gifts, which I appreciate. You guys were part of as well. So appreciate all the love and support from everyone out there. It was really cool. I received a awesome virtual hug, 40-minute video with videos from friends and family, which was cool, including a ton of people from Place to Be Nation, which was awesome, which I did not expect, honestly, that. I figured it'd be family and friends, and as it kept going, and Sheriff Pete showed up, and, you know, Jake showed up, and guys like that, it was pretty awesome. So Zaxby showed up, which was exciting.
Represent.
Brother Nate was in there, so it was a lot of awesomeness that I get to enjoy watching that yesterday. So, anyway, enough about that. We have a very exciting show for everyone here tonight. It is one that we've had some really good hype for, some really good build. It's actually our second one. It might be our first, second installment. I guess we had a couple hardcore heavens. But we do have November to Remember 1995, a fairly infamous show. And I really think, you know, we've talked about it quite a bit, the evolution of ECW. Late 94 is when it really started. 95 has been amazing. I feel like by this point is when word is really starting to get out there. And, you know, I think by 96, a lot of wrestling fans had some level of awareness of their surroundings, at least had heard now of ECW and what was going on. And this is a pretty well-known marquee show in their history. And it was cool to really sit down and dig into it. So any initial thoughts, Jenny, of just heading into the show and what it means for the company?
Well, I think my number one concern here is our new champ, Mikey. I'm worried about his run. And as the company, I mean, what else could they have done to make a bigger splash? All they've done is like get consistently like great guys to come in and do these awesome short runs and, you know, kick ass in ECW and get this huge fan base. I mean, at the end of 95, of course they're getting attention by now, Johnny.
Yeah, this is one of the peak times where those moments that everybody remembers, so specifically about ECW, like with Fonzie and Mikey and Cactus is peaking and of course Austin. And then now we get a Dudley Invasion. So this is stuff that a lot of people really remember.
And of course,
not just in November.
Right. But specifically, this, I think the name of this show, you know, was memorable
and iconic,
known to many. And the November Rain video we talked about in our last episode, all that stuff was just really building the legacy and the legend of ECW. So Let's dive in. We've had a lot of hype. Joey's in the Nest sets up the stage for the night ahead, and we open up with a very interesting opener as we have Bubba Ray Dudley taking on the Broad Street Bully and Don E. Allen. What an opener here, being boss Bully and these guys. Mainly basically so Bubba could come out and kind of open the show with his introductions, as promised, which was a thing, right? The whole Dudley crew leads out Bubba for his big moment. He's got the tux on. I should say the tux jacket, not the full tux. He's got a top hat on. It looks very Dumb and Dumber to me, like a very Lloyd Christmas out here. Really drawn out entrance. The crowd, of course, does the Bubba, kind of mocking Bubba, but doing it lovingly. It reminds me a lot of like the Kurt Angle, you suck type stuff where they're kind of playing along. They don't really hate him. He's just kind of going with the gimmick. I thought Bubba did a good job hyping it up. He says he's over his stuttering problem. He no longer stands here, nervous, stuttering pussy. He's all fired up, and he rolls into the Michael Buffer entrance, but stutters when he gets the rumble, and then it's just a giant mess after that. He can't get it back, and you kind of feel bad for poor Bubba because it's such a big moment for him. And this is a lot of hype behind this, too. They kept playing up that he would do the intro and everything, so that was really cool. So a funny bit to continue his development. Big Dick smacks him, and Bubba gets pissed, and he just wipes out Allen and power bombs him. The Bully jumps on Bubba's back. Bubba beats him down, too. Interesting push here for Bubba. It seems like he may become the centerpiece Dudley after all this is said and done at this point. Didn't look that way out of the gate, but here we are. He covers Bully, and the ref counts. Bubba's sad because he blew the announcing, even though he won this thrown-together match. But this is a good opening segment to kind of kick off what looks to be a Bubba Ray push. And I guess I should clarify, the match was originally Bully and Austin and Bubba and Bubba doing the introductions, and then it just turns into this. So just to kind of level set all that. So classic ECW here, makes you think you're getting this one thing and you get something else. But I went half a star. It was just a squash, but Johnny, I enjoyed like all the character stuff with Bubba. I think it's been really good.
Yeah, well, the whole scene gets at least 2.5 stars. A lot of entertainment. What are you kidding me? This is what ECW is all about. Like JT, you reviewed like 6,000 shows from the house shows. Mm-hmm. What do they usually start with? The crowd pleasing. You get the worker with the baby face usually winning, but here this is geared towards Philly. Mm-hmm. I mean, you got friggin' stuttering fucks, fat bastards, big dicks. Big Spanish Indians, you got handicaps. This is right up Philly Fan Valley. This is all the stuff they live to make fun of. Come on, when he does the let's get ready to ruh, and then Joey says the 1 hour time limit will be strictly enforced, not for the match, but for the introduction. and then he goes, the third annual November, remember, I started with a bang. You know, just Joey's just taking all the batting practice shots. And I love, did you catch the referee Molino when when Bubba does the Bubba bomb and he like does the two like stutters, he goes the and like the referee right next to him, you can see he does a little flinch on both of them, like he's stuttering with them. It's just so funny. It's just what a beautiful mess.
I would rather listen to you recap it than to like actually watch it. Way more entertaining to me to hear you say that shit. I mean, it's fine. I've wavered on the Dudleys back and forth a little bit. Was trending positive and this is okay. Not my favorite, but it's not offensive, but I just gave it like a quarter star.
Well, it depends on what you're looking at. I mean, to me, the match was just him powerbombing him and moving on. Pretty the whole segment was really good. I'm into the Dudleys. John, it sounds like you're getting there, Jenny. I know you've struggled a bit with this package as a whole. Still not making much progress for you with Bubba?
It's just so cringy. And normally I do like the cringe a little bit, but I don't know.
Slow hanging fruit, make fun of the stuttering.
Yeah.
It doesn't age gracefully, but.
And I'm not like super like that or anything. I get it for what it is. It's just still kind of fringe, even for my tastes.
Okay. Well, we'll see how it develops if you continue to feel as such or if you move along. So let's see. Speaking of moving along, Paulie Dangerously is in the ring and asks to dim the lights. The crowd starts to buzz, they heat up. The lights come on, and Sabu is back in the house. The pop is monstrous. Paul and Sabu shake hands. They hug. Crowd chants for Sabu. Chants thank you to Paul. And it is consistent roster restocking that's always ongoing in ECW. Like, whenever they get a shot to bring someone in case anyone's heading out, and, you know, people do head in and out regularly here, So they're bringing back a stalwart. He had a very brief run in WCW in 95. Was on early Nitro. I believe Halloween Havoc he had a match. And things just didn't really work there for him. So he, as soon as he wraps up there, he quickly returns back to ECW, where he'd been gone for quite a while. I think, was it late 94? Early? When did he... Remember, he just kind of vanished, and he no-showed a show, and Paul shit all over him.
Oh, yeah. Fuck you, Sabu, was the last fucking thing I heard. Fuck Sabu.
It
the
was,
whole crowd cheated it.
April 95. So it wasn't that far long. I thought it was earlier than that, but in April... he's supposed to be in the main event of the three-way dance. He no-showed to take a booking for Japan, and he got legitimately fired at the event, and that, of course, started all the issues, yes, with the fuck you, Sabu, and everything. So, but it was cool to see them kind of hug it out and let everyone know out of the gate that, okay, we're going to, you know, put that behind us and move on. So you guys don't have to hate on Sabu for me or anything like that. Paul kind of gives them the okay to show the love.
Oh, kind of fickle, but whatever. It is what it is. It's
nah, but that's what we
I
said
love
back
Sabu in, too, so it's fine.
That's what we said back in April. We said it was no big deal that Paul did that. For, I mean, for that night, he got the crowd on his side to go F Sabu. But we said that when they could just bring him back and all will be forgiven. It's really it's no big surprise, and of course the crowd eats it up. Mm-hmm. They're happy to see him. It was only 7 months. So, yeah.
For sure, and I do think it was key to have Paulie kind of. Let them know that they're okay.
Course,
you know what I mean? Yeah. That was like the, because they're going to ride or die with Paul, right? So it's like, he had to give the okay and say, all right, we'll welcome Sabu back to the family. You guys can all love him again. Yeah. We don't need to hold the grudge. So really cool moment. And let's move on. We have our next match as Conan is taking on Jason. Joey's in the ring. He brings out Jason, who struts down. Joey does his itching with his hives, of course. Out comes Conan, who gets a good welcome. Joey apparently is doing the introductions for this match. Joey then brings out Taz, who is dressed as a referee. Taz says he hasn't been cleared to compete, so he's here to do whatever he can. Jason gets in his face. He calls him a crippled son of a bitch and mocks him. Brings back the old monkey boy threat that he used to throw at him a year ago.
Oh, Lord.
Taz says he's here to do a job, and Jason says he better keep his fucking hands off him. Taz then smacks Jason and calls for the bell. Conan grabs him, hits a splash mountain bomb, and picks up the win. Nothing doing here, just furthering the Taz-Jason heat, killing time for Taz as he rehabs. Kind of a waste of Conan. I mean, you're like, look, I'm not the biggest Conan guy, but I feel like you're bringing him in, you're probably paying him some decent money, and he's just, you know, you could have anyone in this spot with Jason. You don't really need to wait. You could have used him for kind of a quote-unquote dream match or something bigger. It felt like you're kind of just blowing it here, and you could have stuck anyone in there with this. But that all said, I thought Taz was great here, and Jason's always a good student around, Jenny.
Yeah, no way that... Oh, God, what a fucking waste. Why? I don't... Okay. Yeah, this was bullshit for the most part. I don't have much use for Jason anymore. I mean, like, I don't want to see him wrestle. I mean, he could manage the Eliminators, and that's fine, and deal with that, but I just don't see the point in doing this, Johnny.
Yeah, well, you got to mix it up. I mean, once you see that Jason is coming out, whether as a manager or a wrestler, you know it's going to be a lot of garbage and stalling and mostly entertainment. I mean, we can't have 3 hours of a Mysterio psychosis.
Why and, the fuck not?
you got to mix it up.
Look, this show was 30 minutes longer than the other shows that we've done, so this could have easily been
cut. Yeah, agreed. It is nice to review something hour 50 as opposed to two and a half. Yeah, but that's what Jason's going to do here. It's just going to be involved in some nonsense, like with Joey doing the itching thing, and then he corrects Joey, saying, "I'm 218 pounds. See the abs." And Joey's like, "Oh, 218 pounds. See the abs."
Okay, so maybe it was worth it just for Joey.
A couple chuckles. Yeah.
All right.
Well, I think it also was meant to be, and I don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves, but meant to be kind of a red herring for Taz. Like you kind of this is it. Yes. You know, he's still kind of in this thing. He's not really healed. So, like, I think this was done less for his issue with Jason and more to take him out of people's heads. You know what I mean? Like for later. So I think that And in that regard, I think it was wildly successful because it worked on me, you know.
And Taz, to make up for not being, you know, the best promo guy, he's always going to throw in, you know, an F-bomb.
F-bomb,
couple words.
I enjoy that quite a bit.
He's a very angry man, as we'll see.
I like it.
All right, well, we'll see where things head. All right. Next match, Despacito rings out as El Puerto Ricanio is in the ring to take on our good friend Stevie Richards. Puerto Ricanio waits in the ring as Stevie dances out, talks to the fans, and greets one that's wearing an airbrush cutoff shirt that says Blue Meanie. He gives Stevie a gift, and it's a Flock of Seagulls t-shirt.
Yes.
Stevie's pumped.
Half shirt, sir.
That's quite
You're right.
Gift.
It is a cutoff. You are right. Stevie's so excited about this gift. He tells Meanie, hop the railing, come on in. Stevie's so happy, as Jason says, they're two old friends, or maybe they're even attracted to each other. Stevie pulls the new half shirt on, but Puerto Ricanio has enough, dives off the top into him on the floor. Back inside, Puerto Ricanio hits a springboard moonsault for two, follows on a missile dropkick, hits a tope on Meanie on the floor. Puerto Ricanio goes up top, and Stevie knocks him down. Meanie gets a you fat fuck chant. Didn't take them long to go in on that one. Stevie hits a powerbomb and hangs him across the top rope. Stevie hits another powerbomb and calls in the Meanie. They talk for a minute, and Meanie starts to climb to the top. Seems hesitant, tries to talk out of it, but Stevie pushes him up on the top, and then Meanie comes off with a perfect moonsault, but LPR dodges it, of course, and Meanie smashes to the mat. Stevie's not happy. He kicks Meanie to the floor. Joey's trying to figure out who the fuck Meanie is and why he's even here. Puerto Ricanio gets a roll up for two, but as soon as he pops up, Stevie crushes him with a super kick and takes the win. I thought this was pretty fun. Meanie is another great addition to this fucking bizarro Ravens crew that's going on. I always love to see Puerto Ricanio. He's a lot of fun flying around the ring with abandon. You also have Stevie kind of being more positioned as legit and serious, but also all goofy. He's come such a long way from kind of his job days. So I've appreciated his growth, and just so much stuff happens. Like even in these low card matches, John, to your point, you kind of mentioned it as like an MSG thing, but I think even a year ago, we'd always get at least one or two throwaways, or even less, even 6 months ago. You get one or two throwaway matches to open these cards that really didn't mean much, but they have so much going on now, you don't even get that. Even in those matches, shit's happening. So these cards are loaded and stacked with tons of big happenings. We get a pretty big debut here. What'd you think, Johnny?
Yeah, two stars. Mostly for the introduction of Meanie. Meanie's stretch marks are quite the sight. And yeah, the you fat fuck from the crowd was beautiful, and quite the disparity in wardrobe. Meanie and Richards got the half shirts on, and LPR had like a triple X this triple X gray shirt that was like down to his knees, like a skirt or something.
Must have said FUBU on it or something. Like it definitely looked like it was right out of that era.
I definitely had issues with him wearing that shirt during this match.
Okay, I thought it was just me.
No, it's awful.
It's like when a fat guy goes in the pool and doesn't want to take the shirt off.
Yes, I'm like, why are you? You're obviously in great shape. Take the fucking shirt off.
Yeah, it was awesome.
It was driving me insane. I docked it half a star for that, just for that. Yeah, I mean, like, this is weird. I You guys speak about Blue Meanie. I've heard about Blue Meanie before, so I know this is quite a big debut. And I like how random it is, and it works with Stevie's character a lot. The Flock of Seagulls shirt was ridiculous. get the flock out of here, Joey says. But, you know, also pretty funny. Like, this is a little bit better to me than what the Dudleys are doing comedy-wise, I guess. But and the crowd just really fucking hates Richard, so I really enjoyed that more than the love for the Dudleys. So this is basic squash, and I give it a star and a half.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, and I think both you guys are on point with it too. Yeah, Meanie's interesting. Like, you know, I'm curious to see how he evolves because he is a pretty big mainstay, and you know, I guess we saw him in TNA too, Jenny. So it's
right. Yes.
I guess you're not official first time, but
right.
Anyway. Fireball. All right, big time tag team action as the Pitbulls take on the Eliminators. Jason's back. He looks very aggravated as he leads the Elims out to the ring, looking all jacked up. Pitbull stomp out of the ring to step to the ring with Francine to a big pop. They've gotten super over in this time frame.
Yes. Even with me.
Yeah, see?
Amazing.
See? They can win anyone over. We get a great stare down with all six, both teams in dog poses, which was awesome. Francine is wearing a tight leather short dress, garter straps, and high boots, and she's really taken to this gimmick quickly from being Stevie's kind of frumpy girlfriend in the crowd. Saturn and Pitbull 1 get us going. Saturn lands a couple shots and a slam, but Pitbull 1 no-sells and returns the same moves. Saturn goes to the eyes and slugs away, but Pitbull 1 shrugs it off and gets in his face. Pitbull 1 is such a fucking maniac in there. He batters him in the corner, slams him hard to the mat twice, and it's a sidekick. 2 gets a tag and drops an elbow for 2. Saturn goes to the eyes and again tags Cronus. Pitbull 2 powers slams Cronus, but Cronus floats over a slam and hits a tight dragon suplex. Saturn comes back in. We get a double headbutt and a nice spin kick. Saturn hits a springboard clothesline to knock Pitbull 2 outside, and Saturn hits an amazing moonsault from inside the ring with an assist from Cronus onto Pitbull 2 on the floor. It was just an awesome spot. Cronus works over Pitbull 2, slams him, hits a somersault leg drop. Cronus hits a back suplex and chokes away. Instead of covering, Pitbull 2 and Cronus then trade punches, but Pitbull 2 misses a splash in the corner, flies up and over to the floor. Pitbull 2 tore up his elbow on that bump, and his blood is just pouring down his arm. Eliminators tag in and out and work over Pitbull 2, with Saturn hitting a beautiful elbow off the top. Saturn gets a top rope Frankensteiner for 2, and the Elims hit a double pancake. Pitbull 2 gets loaded on top, and Saturn follows, but Pitbull 2 powerbombs him to the mat for a 2 count. Things break down with all four brawling, but Jason sneaks in and hits a leg drop of Pitbull 2. We reset into Pitbull 1 cleaning house after a tag, all four brawling again. Cronus accidentally hits Jason. Pitbull 1 rolls him up for a near fall. Saturn hits a low blow on Pitbull 2 and gets 2 on a tiger bomb. They continue to throw shots as Pitbull 2 puts Cronus on his shoulders. Pitbull 1 goes to close and clotheslines him off. They go over the top rope and to the floor in another amazing spot. The Pitbulls then drop Saturn with a guillotine and cover, but Jason makes a save. Pitbull 2 slams Jason, but then misses a splash in the corner, and Cronus hits a springboard elbow. Pitbull 2 comes back with a kick. Pitbull 1 hits a clothesline. The Pitbulls load up the super bomb on Cronus and hit it for the win. Jason comes in and kisses Francine, and Joey is shocked that he likes women. Pitbull 2 pulls him up, and Pitbull 1 smashes him with a chair. Saturn comes back and uses the chair to take out the Pitbulls and then hit total elimination on both after the bell. What a super fun tag match. These dudes are fucking crazy with their offense. I mean, they're flying all over the place, bump into the floor. They just don't give a shit. The Eliminators, especially Saturn, were super impressive. Lots of wild offense and just never, ever slowed down. Bomb after bomb. Really good chemistry. And this looks to be like we're setting up the anchor teams for the future, at least heading into 96 here to reset the tag division. So, Jenny, went 3.25, and I like this way more than I expected to going in.
Me too. Like, I felt like for the Eliminators, for me, I felt this is a big match and they needed to deliver in it for me, because they kind of been kind of doing bullshit stuff. We hadn't really seen them really show out. I don't feel like anyway. So this is what I needed from them. I thought this was really good. You know, I've been really into the Pitbulls. I really love their posing and stuff and the beginning of the match, but they really need to, I think, incorporate Francine more into that. Kind of the way Woman is with Sandman, just more Francine, like, because they don't really kind of pose with her the way they pose with each other. So anyway, that was just a little nitpick. All the calls that you made, like that amazing moonsault by Saturn, that was gorgeous. Like, all, they just kept, like, I mean, just move after move after, like, it just never, and all of it looked really good. Like, it was sharp, it was stiff, it wasn't sloppy, like, and everybody was just on their game in this match. Like, I gave it 3 stars. I really liked it, and I really liked it when Jason or Joey said, I'll be damned, he likes women. What did you think, Johnny?
Yeah, there was a lot of blood, a lot of carnage.
Mm-hmm.
The right team won. The Pits hit the super bomb for a convincing win. And, of course, the Eliminators get the heat back. And Jason, with kind of a Harvey Weinstein-ish moves, just kind of grabs Francine and humps her. And really not too smooth there. I expected a little better out of Jason, you know, the way he looks and carries on. But,
you thought he would have more game?
Yeah, that was real rapey. Yeah.
Are you shocked? I'm not. Sleaze bag. But I think Francine could kick his ass. There's a match. Put that on.
Francine got healthy legs. She definitely could kick. Definitely.
All right. Well, let's move along as a big rivalry continues to burn hotly here in ECW's Rey Mysterio Jr. takes on Psicosis, and this will be a Mexican death match, which lines up for some insanity. Psicosis has an ECW shirt and leather jacket on, looking a little badass tonight for this one. Rey marches out, and the crowd is buzzing a bit already. Rey has a poncho brandished with ECW and AAA logos both on it. Joel Gertner does some awesome intros here. Really makes it feel like a big-time fight. Does it in Spanish. Really good hype. Psicosis charges hard but whiffs on a dropkick, and we're off and running. Rey hits a hurricanrana, but they trade off missing dropkicks, and Rey hits a top rope hurricanrana for a three count. But Psicosis easily beats up the count. Of course, when I mentioned Mexican death match, you have 10 seconds after a pin to get back to your feet. So that's the standard death match rules here. Psicosis misses another dropkick, but chops Rey hard and tries to suplex him. But Rey floats over, takes Psicosis over the top with another hurricanrana. Outside, Rey moves the guardrail around, but mistimes his attempt to jump and slams into it. Psicosis just bowers them with a chair. Back inside, Psicosis hits a missile dropkick, slams Rey, and hits a top rope moonsault for the pin. Rey is barely up before 10, but we keep rolling. Psicosis crushes him with a dropkick to the buckle, press slams him off onto the top, and then starts to work the back. Psicosis pancakes him, blocks a rana with a powerbomb, and picks up the fall, but Rey survives. Psicosis splashes him in the corner. It's a nasty Oklahoma stampede as Rey just crumples down. Psicosis power slams him, heads up top. It's a corkscrew senton for the pin again. Rey once again barely beats the count. So many falls in this match, it's kind of crazy. Psicosis meets him with a dropkick, nails a second one, grabs a chair and DDTs Rey on it, smashes him in the back. Psicosis goes up and hits a moonsault on the chair and gets another fall. Rey again barely beats the count. Psicosis barrels into him with a shoulder block, hits a low dropkick to the knee. Psicosis slams a chair on Rey and tries a moonsault, but Rey holds the chair up and he bounces off of it. Rey pops up and throws the chair in Psicosis' face. Rey knocks him outside, dives off the apron with a cross body block that drives him into the fans. Rey gets back on the apron, hits a perfect springboard moonsault into the fans. And, I mean, just awesome stuff, like completely next level for late 1995 in North America. Psicosis bails to the back of the arena, but Rey follows them. They brawl back where Rey smashes him with a chair. They go through the crowd and go over to the staging by the nest. Rey throws a chair at Psicosis' head, goes up to the nest, leaps off, and it's a hurricanrana for the fall. Rey and the ref head back to the ring, and Psicosis cannot return. And Rey Mysterio Jr. wins the Mexican death match. Just wild. Great hardcore violence. Lots of hard snap flying offense by both. Rey's dives are amazing. I love Psicosis' snap spots as well. Impeccable chemistry. Mind-blowing stuff, like I said, for this point. I cannot imagine being in 1995 and watching this live in this arena. And I say that a lot. Amazing how ECW just reloads and mixes styles as we move along. We've talked about it before, you know, how we've just evolved in this promotion. And here we are having these guys go out there and do this match at this speed. It's just insane. It's a classic. It's well known. It's one of those top ECW matches you think about when you think of this era. John, I went 4 stars for this.
Okay. One less, 3, because I didn't like how they counted the threes before the 10. You know, I'm just used to the, if you got to make it to the 10, why even bother with the three counts? So that took me out of it a little. And the finisher, the hurricanrana on the chair, it didn't really look that devastating. That was the one that was going to finish him off. The finish was a little, I was hoping for something a little more devastating to sink in the finish. But otherwise, brilliant moves. And I like the touch at the beginning with the Spanish the ring announcer announcing in Spanish. That was a nice touch.
I really like the Spanish announcer as well too. And then Johnny, you just said the Rana off the eagle's nest was not impressive enough. Is that correct?
I didn't say not impressive.
I'm pretty sure.
Maybe not devastating to end the
devastating. Okay.
To end the match.
We'll tell it to Psicosis, all right? Because, I mean, he beat the shit out of Rey for the majority of the match, and then Rey woke the fuck up and pulled that shit out of his ass. I like this a lot. Like, Psicosis really got over with me even more in this match. His first move, he just eats shit in the turnbuckle, just totally misses Rey. I was like, oh, God, that's not a good start. But After that, he gets his groove on and really fucks Ray up. It's really fun to watch. And it keeps going back to this drop kick that I really like. I think it's because he's huge and he has extremely long legs. So it's just really fun watching him drop kick dudes. I really like the crowd brawl. They had some nasty chair shots in there as well. And then the run off the fucking eagle's nest. And then the Ray goes back into the ring and sets up the chair and just sits there and wins it. I really like that. That was very attitudinal after he just got his ass kicked quite a bit.
Well, I think that was part of it, too, is that, you know, he was so far from the ring that even if it wasn't so devastating, John, it was enough to make him not be able to get back to the ring in 10. Yeah, I'm kind of with you on the three count first part. I don't know. I guess I just felt like it just felt like a lucha thing, right? Like, I don't know. Like that kind of quick pin and moving fast through stuff and adding that. Like, for whatever reason, in that format, it felt like it was okay. But I guess, I don't know, Savage and Crush did the same thing at WrestleMania 10.
It didn't bother me at all.
Yeah, like,
it's just a little thing, you know?
If you got till 10, why bother getting up at 3? It's like, yeah, who cares? 1, 2, 3,
8. Oh, yeah, I see what you're saying. Yeah.
I could lie down and you could count to 9 100 times and I'll right. still get up. It's like, come on, man.
Not worth the risk.
Well, you got to sell the getting up, like Ray did.
I know, it's nitpicking, nitpicking a little bit.
It's a 4-star match.
No, I mean, yeah, I'd have a bigger issue with, and this is what was more like, okay, well, it's just kind of the style, was all of the pins. You know, I think there's probably a fine line between, like, no pins and, like, everything is a pin. And I think they were trending toward everything being a pin a little too much. I don't think they fully got to the point where it was overkill, but, again, that would just be a minor quibble because it was amazing stuff, especially again when you put yourself in that world in that time frame. When you think about what the other, the Yeti was in WCW at this point. Like, there's so much other stuff going on, and this is going on in this arena. it's insane. All right, so Kosis hobbles off as Jason shows up again. Talks about how great Rey Mysterio is. Says his friend Conan disgraced himself earlier. Rey tries to leave, but Jason offers him his managerial services. He says he can be his little Supreme Fighting Machine, which I don't know if that was a joke at Kama, the Supreme Fighting Machine, or not, but it was great if it was. Jason calls him a little bitch and says he'll kick his ass. delusional. But Rey wipes him out. It's really funny. Rey wipes him out, leaves him laying. Out come the Eliminators to defend the manager. They beat the shit out of Rey with some double-team offense. In comes 911. The Eliminators attack him, but he fights them off. Rey then takes out Saturn and drop kicks him into 911, who hits both Eliminators with the double choke slam to a big pop. 911 then puts Rey on his shoulders, and they parade around. Which is a fun moment, and it kind of made Rey feel more like he was part of the world, and not just a one-off in this like never-ending traveling feud with Psychosis. So I thought that was kind of neat because it made him feel more integrated in what was going on, John. But what'd you think of the aftermath?
Perfect use of 911. No, seriously.
As a base for Rey?
Yeah.
Rey just climbs all over.
I mean, we've established he's very limited, but emphasize his size.
Stand there like a tree.
Emphasize his size and his choke slams. That's definitely, and Jason just mocking Rey, patting him on the head, saying, be my little bitch.
Well, he said, your friend disgraced me. I mean, he disgraced himself.
Yeah.
I was like, no, he disgraced you. And all that escalated very quickly. All of a sudden, like in 3 minutes, Rey has a squad. And I'm just like, okay, kind of out of nowhere, but I'm okay with it.
Yeah, it was fun. It was good. And it, again, this gives the crowd their taste in 911, which is, they always want. So
all that matters. Yeah.
Take you back. Take you back
to the streets as the Public Enemy head to the ring to take on our new tag team champions, Too Gold, Scorpio, of course, and the Sandman. Woman leads out the champs. Amazing swagger. I like the usage of these guys in this team. Sandman kind of taking a little break from the world title picture. Pairing up with Scorp is a cool deal. Scorp is going to his TV title too, of course. All the belts on the line in this one. Joe reminds us that Scorpio beat Rocco Rock to win the tag titles, picked Sandman to be his partner. Long entrance here at Scorpio's team, but Sandman does his usual bit during it. Scorpio's great dancing. He grinds up on woman. Wonderful group. Public Enemy chug out to a big pop. Loved is always here. Joey runs down all the rules and possibilities. There's a sign in the crowd that says there's no hood in Vince's circus. What did you think of this one, John?
Oh, I liked it. Yeah.
There's also a sign that says too fat, Scorpio.
But he's a chiseled 235 pounds.
All right, so the man who gets the pin here gets a shot at Mikey later tonight, too. So there's a ton on the line. All the titles and the world title shot. Gertner does a full-fledged Michael Buffer intro as Joey compares Bobby Heenan to George Burns. He's really been going in on Bobby lately. Him, Emmy, and Gene. Scorpio takes makes Gertner announcements, of course, at the Chisel 235. Joey just loses it. The crowd starts to chant, please don't go. And Joey says, because they're not champs, Public Enemy are not tied down, and the offers are pouring in from the WWF and WCW. Public Enemy does have somebody's gear on here, I thought. Already looking like maybe they're getting some new checks. I don't know. Scorpio trolls Public Enemy on the mic, so rumors are obviously flowing that PE could be on the way out. Scorpio throws out a dance challenge to Rock. He obliges. Joey takes a dig at Alex Wright. We get the dance off, and the crowd is into it. Joey even gets in on the action in the booth. We see him dancing. Woman joins in, too, and then Scorpio and Sandman have had enough, and they attack from behind. All four get us going by brawling, leading to Rock hitting a double clothesline off the top. Grunge hits a second one on the ground. Public Enemy clears both champs out of the ring to reset and officially have their block party with the fans. We talk some shit on the mic as the champs stall some more. I said block party, but I guess house party is a technical term. Sandman and Grunge get us going. They trade some offense until Grunge hip tosses Sandman outside. Rock meets him with a plancha. Scorpio comes in, hits a high cross body on Grunge. Rock pops back in, hits an axe off the top on Scorp, and then Sandman drops an elbow on the Rock. Onto Rock. Everyone grabs a chair. They all start swinging at each other like a giant sword fight that turns into a fist fight. Everyone heads back out. The weapons start flying. Scorpio grabs a prosthesis hand from a fan and uses that. This next level insanity going on. Grunge is already pouring blood dealing with Scorpio. Sandman chucks a bear in Rocco's face. Grunge gets a two on a Vader bomb as Rock uses a pumpkin pie on Sandman and throws him in the ring. Woman drags Sandman back in the aisle, but he's out on his feet. We reset with Rock hitting a flying head scissors and a Mexican arm drag on Sandman, but Sandman catches him with a backbreaker and then follows with a slingshot leg drop. Sandman slams Rock, and Scorpio hits a slingshot splash for two. Grunge comes in and batters Scorpio, but he fights through that and beats on Rock some more. Scorpio hits a side slam, but whiffs on a drop kick. Rock misses a springboard moonsault and eats a crescent kick. Scorp gets two on a double underhook powerbomb. The champs work together well here, I thought, in their tags and their offense. Sandman and Grunge end up brawling outside as Woman canes Rock in the head. Grunge backdrops Sandman on a table. Rock suplexes Scorp over the top to the floor. Sandman puts Grunge on a table and then puts him through it with a front suplex. And then Rock clobbers him from behind, puts him on the remaining piece, and hits a slingshot somersault senton into it. Back inside, Scorpio beats on Rock with a broom handle, follows him with a splash in the corner. Scorpio goes up and hits a great moonsault for a near fall, follows with a spin wheel kick, and both make desperate tags. Things break down again. As Rock goes up top, a Scorpio moves and he barrels into Grunge. A staggered Sandman just flops forward, lands on Grunge, and picks up the win. Sandman and Scorpio remain tag champs. Scorpio keeps the TV title, and Sandman will take on Mikey Whipwreck later tonight. Scorpio revives Sandman by pouring beer in his mouth, which was funny. Really fun team. And a really good brawl. Had some stalling spots throughout that hurt the pacing, but the big spots were well done. Scorpio is so awesome as a heel throughout this whole run and has really, really shined. Sandman stepping back into this role a bit has been fun too. Public Enemy, I thought, definitely seemed a little checked out. I don't know if they're starting to feel stale or if it's because we kind of know where things are headed with them. But to me, you could definitely feel a difference with them. If it was a torch passing, it worked well in that regard. We'll see what happens. But and Sandman moves on to stuff later. So, Jenny, all in, I thought this was good. I really love Scorpio and Sandman together. I went 3 stars.
3 stars. Okay, so I have like a theory about this match. And I don't know what makes it different from any other match, but hear me out. Okay, so the dance-off thing in the beginning was like really funny. Like, I really enjoyed that. Also, I really enjoyed the intro. Too Cold adds a lot to an already great intro. And they're all just really hamming it up. So I think they all just like did a bunch of blow in the back, like before they came out to do this, because they all just really looked like they were having a blast. And like, it was really fun nonsense before the match even started. And then it just got fucking wild. Crazy ass violence, and a dude's hand comes in the match, and I was losing it with that. putting those guys to the table, I know it does feel a little bit checked out, but I don't know. It's still going to get over with me. Like, they're still amazing, and they do look good in blue in this gear that they've got going on. I thought Sandman was sexy as fuck in this. He was really feeling himself. I think it was the dance off that really got him feeling himself. And I thought he was really good in this match. Like, he's trim and he's mean and he's moving around. He's like doing crazy shit and looks like he's having a blast doing it. Like, joyfully just taking these insane shots and these sick moves. But I am very scared now because he has a rematch with Mikey later on, since he was the one who ended up with the pin. I really like this a lot. I gave it 4 stars, Johnny.
Yeah, 3 for me. I love it. The intros alone were epic when they announced Sandman from Utah, because the public drunk laws are relaxed there. And and then when they caught during the dance off, when they caught Joey doing the Cabbage Patch, and then they panned to Joey for a second, and then Joey got embarrassed, and yeah, the crowd was chanting, "Please don't go to Public Enemy." They must have known something was up there, and a woman for a brief 2 or 3 seconds did her little sexy dance, but unfortunately,
yeah, she
got
did.
It got interrupted. Unfortunately, I don't think woman has very much rhythm, but. She's seductive in different ways. And,
yeah, dancing's not her forte. Yeah.
And the pie spot, just delirious there. And then after when Sandman got the victory, his white shirt was just like a mixture of blood, dirt, and a pie, just a whole bunch of fluids on it. His shirt was a disaster, a COVID nightmare.
Various amounts of liquids.
Yeah.
All over him.
But a great celebration.
Did either of you guys get the feel that Public Enemy, like, is it just, was it me paying like hyper attention to it? Did either of you get the feel that they felt a little? Let me ask you this way then. Are either of you ready for a Public Enemy break, or would you be sad if they left?
No, I'd be sad. Definitely. Yeah. The Please Don't Go. I was surprised because I didn't think it was that time yet, but I guess it is. I guess something is coming.
Well, thanks for that, because I didn't pick up on any of that. So now I get to.
Oh, you didn't hear the "Please Don't Go" chant?
No, I heard that, but you know.
Yeah, well, why would they say that? I mean, you know, these smart fans. They,
I don't know.
I told you, never get too attached to anybody in these
things. I know. I can't help it.
Well, all right. So it sounds like you're both, you know, would be sad if they left. So we'll see.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. Yeah.
They haven't left yet. No one's leaving anything yet, so we'll see how things go. All right, video package hyping the big feud between Todd Gordon and Bill Alfonso, and that is our next match that's had tons of hype. As Commissioner Gordon takes on Fonzie, Beulah heads out to referee as announced. Joey says she's gorgeous, but wonders if she can handle the job. Beulah's basically wearing a modified tennis outfit with the cut-off sweater top and a mini skirt. The crowd, of course, chants, "Show your tits." Joey's in on that one. He's in on the chant. Fonzie's out with no music. He's in full ref garb and has a towel on his shoulders. He also has a 5 o'clock shadow. He's running his mouth. Gordon is stoic as he storms out, rocking the tracksuit, his fist taped up like he's fucking Undertaker. He's in a gorilla position. Gordon turns to face the fans, but Fonzie jumps off the apron, shoves him into the railing. That looked really ugly. Fonzie smacks him around in the fans and then gets in Beulah's face, but she slaps him. Fonzie then clotheslines Beulah, which is fucking nuts. Gordon comes in from behind and hammers away as we get a catfight. They trade punches and chokes as the crowd is all fired up. Gordon grabs a mic and tells Fonzie to fight man to man. They meet in the ring and trade some more punches as we get the shit shot chants on the crowd, which is funny. Gordon hits a short clothesline and chokes away as the crowd chants for blood. Joey says Gordon is defending the beliefs of every hardcore ECW fan and wrestler. He's laying in kicks and strikes, not stopping at all until Fonzie hits a low blow. There's no ref at all out there. At this point, Beulah is taken away. Fonzie grabs a mic and rants about kicking Gordon's ass. We head outside, where Fonzie jaws with the fans, but it turns into a hard cookie sheet shot. Gordon then slams him into an open chair over and over, and Fonzie is split wide open. Gordon slugs away, but Fonzie goes to the eyes. Gordon no-sells it and keeps smacking away. Back inside, Fonzie catches Gordon coming in and then lines up a frying pan shot, but Gordon blocks it with a low blow and lights up Fonzie with the pan. He covers and counts his own pin. In comes Taz in that referee gear from earlier, starts to count, but he stops at two and then drills Gordon with a hard right hand. Taz puts Fonzie on top and counts the fall. The crowd and Joey Styles were not happy with that at all. All right, let's talk about the match first. So we'll get to the post-match in a moment. I thought the match was super fun, better than you'd expect. The strikes were soft and sloppy, of course, but who cares? Lots of emotion and hate and investment. They did a good job keeping it moving. The swerve ending was good, too, as Fonzie now has a new direction to go to keep him fresh. Because at some point, you know, they can't just keep running with him being the authority of the, you know, sports commission. So they have to do something else with him. All in all, it was good fun. And I think, looking back even more so now, the Taz thing was good because it got him in the ref shirt, right? So if you look back at the lines to trace, it's actually really good booking and really forward thinking to have a reason that he would be an official referee on this evening to do this. So I thought that was really cool, the thought that went into that. So Johnny, I went 2.5 on this. And again, we'll get to the post-match in a moment. Just what did you think of the match?
Yeah, 2 stars. You nailed it because otherwise, why would he just come out randomly for the first time with a ref shirt instead of you know, one of the regular
or refs, even like at all? Why would he even show up at all?
Yeah. Malin or the other guy would have came out then. So yeah, you nailed it. I had the same point. And but for what it was, Gordon, you know, it looked like two drunk accountants, you know, having a brawl about some work issues. It was beautiful. Fonzie took the most of it, and like he should, to get the heat with the frying pan and bloody. And I love Joey calling him a rat face, and the fans at the beginning trying to get Beulah to show something. That was beautiful too, and typical. But yeah, for these two, that's about the best you could expect. And nuclear heat from the crowd when Taz turned on poor Todd.
Dude, what the shit? Todd, there's so much hate in this match. Like, it is so good. Like, I love Todd Gordon. He was feeling himself as much as Sandman was in the previous match. I mean, he was, you know, like you said, the strikes were soft or whatever. But, you know, I thought they, like Johnny said, it did look like, you know, just some regular dudes just brawling on the side of this road or something. I don't know. It felt real, you know, and that's what I liked about it. I love that Fonzie bleeds. I love that Beulah takes a clothesline. That's great. It's been a while, I feel like, since she, you know, since Tommy Dreamer piledrived her face off. So I really enjoyed, like, the actual matching brawly part of it. And as far as Taz goes, he has lost his goddamn mind, and we could talk about that now. I gave the match 2.5 stars.
And ECW really is good at, like, making these what could be a farce or a spectacle. You know, you think of, like, ones Dodie has done, right? Like Teddy Long versus Eric Bischoff, or Nick Patrick, you know, against Earl Hebner, or Jose Lothario and Jim Cornette. You know, like, I get what they're doing a lot of the time and whatever, but ECW really does a nice job nailing those. And whether it's just the unbridled violence or the build, whatever it is, these types of things pop much more here than they do in other promotions. So that's always enjoyable. So, you know, when you get something like this, you can expect probably something wild with some crazy booking. All right, so the crowd chants for Sabu. Taz grabs the mic and says they can't say his. They can chant his fucking name all night, but he ain't coming. Taz, and so, you know what? That made me actually wonder, like, if the order that this aired on this tape was the order it happened in the arena, because the way he talks, it doesn't sound like Sabu's there. I don't know. Did you guys feel that way too? Like, he's kind of like, he ain't coming. Like, why would he say that if they knew he was there? You know?
I think he's just saying that he's not going to respond.
He's a pussy, or whatever.
Yeah, he's not fucking with me right now.
Okay. I don't know. Yeah, I wasn't sure if they taped it. Because I know this, again, this is a tape released way after. So I don't know if they, like, cut it up to have that earlier for some reason. But all right. So Taz was hurt. He says he didn't get one call or letter or tears like Dreamer did, or like Funk did, or even Sabu when they got hurt. A lot of F-bombs from Taz. Taz wants to know, what about him? He says, fuck you to the crowd. Fonzie gloats into the camera. Taz says his buddy Paul Heyman told him to take his time. He could be back as soon as he wants, but the problem is he has to pay his fucking bills and support his family. He doesn't have a lawyer father to do it for him. Fonzie cares about him. He wants to put money in his pocket. And you just got, like, bloody Fonzie in the background, just, like, loving it. They don't give a flying fuck about the fans. Taz and Fonzie then head out together. Joey is so mad, so upset. Great promo and interesting new direction for Taz. Joey says all these years he would never sell out for WCW or WWF, but he sells out to Fonzie. Taz shit-talks a fan, says he's seen better heads come out of a zipper, and then dares him to come fight. Joey says Taz didn't talk for 9 years, but he's got plenty to say now. This is an amazing promo, awesome atmosphere and segment. And it started with Taz in the booth as Peterson Archer that night in that match. And culminates here with the complete rehabbing of him as a wrestler and a character from the Tasmaniac who was biting Jason in the face a year and a half ago. To this point, just cutting a scathing promo and kicking off a potentially awesome heel turn that also, again, gives Fonzie something else to do. And the immediate association with Fonzie just makes him just completely next level. Jenny, what did you think of this whole scene?
Yes, Taz is clearly insane now, but I'm here for it because Fired Up Taz is real hot. Y'all were harping on his ref shirt. I think we should talk about his sweatpants because that was the piece of clothing that caught my attention more than his shirt. You know, it's clear that Fonzie doesn't really give a fuck about Taz, but that's besides the point, I guess. But, you know, I thought he was great. You know, I loved Todd just rolling on the floor, out of his mind. But yeah, like, I'm like Joey. Like, I feel exactly like Joey. Like, I love Taz. He's not my hero or anything, but, like, I really love him. And I feel very disappointed and let down by him. What has happened to him? Why does he feel this way? Especially, like, taunting the guy in the crowd, you know, like, laying down, like, come pin me. Like, come on. I don't know. That's a little bit rough. But I do like the heel Taz. So, Johnny?
Yeah, it was a little sad that nobody came out to help Gordon, to help Todd out.
Well, Todd, he put on a good showing, so he was all right.
Yeah. Taz only gave him one shot then. But I love Taz challenging the fans individually. And saying I've seen better heads coming out of his zip.
That was funny. Yes.
I shut that fan right up. Beautiful.
Well, we'll see where things take Taz as we move forward, but I think it's been needed for him. He has felt a little bit neutral. I know the neck injury, obviously, but even the stuff where he's just kind of teaming with the Steiners, like, he hasn't really been anything heated in a while. So I think this was a necessary turn. I think he had done all he could do in his current run. So. After his big win earlier in the night, the Sandman is coming out for his title shot. And here we go again with this rivalry. Back at it. Sandman and Woman come out, but hang on. Out comes our old friend, Superstar Steve Austin, who has made a habit of getting involved in matches between Sandman and Mikey Whipwreck. He shows up out of nowhere, beats the shit out of Sandman with a cane, stun guns him on the rail, and then chugs a beer. A great beat down of nowhere. Austin heads to the ring and celebrates. Out come medics, and Sandman gets stretchered out. Austin gets a mic and calls out Mikey, and it looks like suddenly Mikey has an interesting challenge ahead of him as he heads to the ring because he will now take on Steve Austin. Austin shits on Mikey, tells him he doesn't belong in the same ring with him and Sandman, couldn't make it out, so he's in trouble. For tonight, Mikey's name will be Eric Bischoff. Austin demands Mikey leaves the ring when his name gets announced, but Mikey defies him, and then Mikey just gives in and Austin jumps him. They spill outside. Austin hits a stun gun on Mikey on the rail. Back inside, Austin's all over him, clubbing and kicking away viciously. Austin chokes the champ on the ropes, and back inside, he whips him hard to the rail. The crowd breaks out a Hogan chant, and Austin responds with a big boot and leg drop, which was an awesome moment. And Joey says, of course, that lame-ass crap doesn't work here at ECW. Austin chucks Mikey outside and stun guns him on the rail again. Austin is just possessed here, unloading on Mikey, coming back with chops. Austin begs off and says his tricep is hurt, and Mikey goes right at him. Back inside, Mikey kicks away, but Austin blocks a charge and hits a stun gun for two. Joey thinks Austin may be punching himself out here. Mikey goes for a sunset flip, and Austin pulls Austin's tights down as he tries to pull him over. Mikey finally gets him down, floats into a cover, and gets the upset win. And a really cool finish, and Mikey gets a clean win over a megastar. Austin crushes Mikey with a clothesline after the bell and kicks at him, and then chucks him outside and walks off. A fun match, mainly an Austin squash, really, but filled with a ton of energy and nonstop brawling. Austin was aggressive and brutal in his offense. Mikey sold like a champ, as always. And Austin also sold nicely for Mikey in his spurts and put him over clean. Everyone wins. Austin proves he's in shape as he's trying to get that big money deal. Mikey gets a win over him, and everyone's ready to rock. So I went 2 3/4, Johnny. I thought this was a fun match. Nice to see Mikey get the clean win. A little bit of a swerve, but I think everyone would be fine getting to see Austin in the ring here over Sandman anyway. What'd you think of this one?
Well, Mikey didn't. He didn't really do anything except for the getting the three count. But yeah, this is a total Austin show. Sorry, Jenny. Total Austin show. Definitely, the stun gun is so over the way he executes it as a move right now, and his attack on Sandman and drinking the beer. Just this is all Austin, the star of this one. And the difference is, Mikey was very, very pale and white. And Austin, in November, he had a deep tan. He must have been living in Florida at this time, just flying in. Because, when Mikey pulled the tights down, that white ass and that bronze skin was quite the difference.
Yeah, I mean, it bumped it up like at least half a star.
For you, yeah.
Yeah, for me. Yeah, I mean, Austin really clobbered Sandman when he came in, like, knocked him right in the cameraman. That shit was great. And then Damage Control, we didn't even talk about that. Damage Control comes out and tends to Sandman. I was like, what is this shit? And the stuff was hard to watch, frankly, where Austin was just casually beating Mikey's ass. Mikey, you know, he was scared, but he looks good in gold, and he got some of his own offense eventually in there. A little bit more than just the roll-up, but it was a great roll-up with bare ass cheeks. So 3 stars for me, and I liked Joey on commentary as well.
And super excited that Mikey Whipwreck is still our ECW World Heavyweight Champion.
Delightful match.
Will Smith is back, as is Sabu, taking on Hack Myers. Hack is in the ring with Paul. He gives him some applause, says he's a big fan, and Paul says, you want to turn back the fucking clock? We got one word for you, Sabu. Sabu stalks out, and that manic energy is right back with him. Paul stays in Sabu's corner, and the crowd is hot. Sabu works the leg, gets a slingshot leg drop for two before going in on a chin lock. Sabu hits a DDT and grabs a chair, nails Hack with a springboard chair shot for two, works the hand and fingers. Sabu crushes Hack with a clothesline, hits a springboard leg lariat for near fall. Back to the chin lock as Joey says Sabu is straying from his usual arsenal as he hits a splash in the corner. Hack fires up with some right hands and a big power slam for two. Hits his finisher, but Sabu gets his foot on the rope. During the cover, they tumble outside. Sabu catches Hack coming back in, hangs him over the middle rope. Sabu hits his guillotine leg drop, but is too banged up to cover. The Shah lands some more punches, but Sabu nails him with a big leaping DDT, follows with a spin wheel kick. Hack tumbles outside. Sabu meets him with a leaping hurricanrana off the apron. Sabu hits a springboard leg lariat off a chair into the railing as he's really opening up the offense now. Back inside, Sabu tries a missile dropkick, but Hack blocks it with a powerbomb for two. Hack slams Sabu down, heads up top. Sabu meets him and does a super victory roll for two. Goes up top again, but Hack knocks him down, grabs a chair, and just bashes him in the skull. The chair is in the ring and it has a fan's jacket on it still. Hack hits the hanging leg drop on the apron, but Sabu comes back and spikes Hack into the chair. We head back outside where the crowd pops as Sabu sets up a table. Joey says WCW told him not to do this. He was too extreme for the Cartoon Network. Sabu puts Hack on the table, does a springboard moonsault off the chair, puts Hack through the table with it, which looked amazing and graceful. Just a tremendous spot. Hack rolls back in. Sabu slams him down, heads up top, and crushes him with an atomic Arabian facebuster, which is just insane looking. Sabu covers, and that is that for the wild finish. Gertner announces that Sabu wants to recognize the effort of the Extreme Shah, and Sabu bows to him as Paul helps him up, and we get a handshake, which is a cool endorsement from Sabu. Fun return for him. Basically an extended squash, but Hack held his own and really hung in there in a tough spot. Sabu hasn't missed a step. The crowd is pumped to have him back in a cool moment on a special show, and we'll see where he slots in the card, because I can't say there's like a glaring hole somewhere that he can easily fit in. So it'll be interesting how they use him, Jenny. I went 2 3/4.
Yeah, I was sort of interested in this pairing with Hack Myers. It seems odd to me. Either elevating Hack, or I mean, I would assume that would be the point, right? I don't know. It just seems like a very odd opponent for his return. Am I wrong?
No, somebody more heelish would have been. You figure.
That's what I thought too, because everybody likes Hack.
Yeah.
So I'm just like, so it sort of felt exhibition-y, and maybe that was the point of it. You know, just showing off whatever. Because he did. I mean, he showed out. All his moves looked amazing. His glittering gold pants looked amazing. It's just, you know, shit you want to see Sabu do. And he fucking kicks ass at it. And also was very graceful and acknowledges Hack at the end of the match. So that was, you know, sort of a cool move on his part. So 2 3/4 for me as well.
Yeah, I didn't mind the Hack piece of it, only because I think it was meant to be like just an exhibition welcome home. I think they figured Hack could take all the offense. And he's like over enough to kind of like, yeah, it's not going to be a heated thing.
It doesn't hurt him.
Yeah, but it doesn't take away from Sabu either, because it's not like he's that over that he's going to get out pop Sabu. So I think they just wanted someone that could, you know, give Sabu a good brawl and wasn't going to, you know, outshine him in any way. And I took it as more of like, here's a welcome home exhibition and we'll get bit to business with Sabu next. Like, this was just reestablishing him as a presence in ECW to me.
Yeah, because the crowd was like they were like still with Hack, but of course they wanted Sabu to win. So this goes to like, you know, where the roster is. Of course, it's tough for them to keep guys in and out, but like, they don't really have like a mid-level heel that would have been good putting Sabu, maybe like one of those stupid Dudleys or something they could have thrown in there as you know. But usually most of their heels are like too important to, you know, to take a loss to Sabu here. So that's just where they are. And then again, they wanted somebody with a little more stature than like a, you know, a Donnie Allen or something like that. So. But it was good, and I like at the end how they acknowledged you know, Hack and you know, and even Paul Lee, which is weird.
All right, well, we'll see how they slot Sabu in, because I am interested to see how he's going to fit back into things, because the card is so loaded. It's like where does he fit?
Yeah.
You know, like there's not really a ton of room. Like, all his old friends are busy with other shit, and the world title's kind of tied up. Like, he's not going to get to a feud with Mikey Whipwreck, probably. You know, so it's like, it's kind of like, where does he go from here? I guess naturally, maybe Taz, but we'll see.
Well, it's ECW. Any day of the week, somebody awesome could come in the door.
True, you never know. All right, tag team main event time was, we reset the clock to a year ago as Terry Funk is back teaming with Tommy Dreamer against Cactus Jack and Raven. So not only is Sabu returning tonight, Terry Funk is back as well. So a little old flavor from the ECW early year. Joey says Funk is contemplating retirement. This could be one of his last matches. Okay. Nice reaction for him and Tommy.
Again?
One of a million retirements. I think this legit was actually one time for him.
Is Dennis Stamp going to come out as ref?
He's waiting.
Not booked.
Wasn't involved. This feud has been intense, and there's
the
a lot of...
The phone can ring any day.
I don't do any tricks. Just Just jump. The feud's been intense. There's a lot of history woven all through all four guys. Jack has an amazing shirt, by the way. A very infamous shirt with the Dungeon of Doom airbrushed on it. And a heart on the back that says Dungeon of Doom written in the middle of it. And Jack says he hopes he was paid to buy that. So it's got like fucking Zodiac, Shark, and whoever else airbrushed on the front. So he continues his WCW love. Jack grabs the mic. He tells Funk to stop wasting time, get his old ass to the floor. But of course, it's just a bait so Cactus and Raven can have the ring and now hold the higher ground. They keep cutting off Funk and Dreamer from getting in, which I thought was a pretty cool start. Tommy and Funk finally get inside and all four brawl as Joey talks about the wars these guys have had that we've seen over the years. We spill right back outside, all four trade hands. Funk and, smashes Jack with a chair, throws it in the ring, drills Raven in the back of the head, which was really fucking ugly. Stevie comes down with a cart full of weapons as Funk empties a garbage can full of plunder and starts to use it. Outside, Tommy and Funk load Stevie into the shopping cart and drive him into the post. Tommy gets a VCR from a fan and drills it into Raven's skull.
Oh my God.
As someone that still maintains thousands of VHS tapes, I cringe at the destruction of that VCR. Because mid-90s VCRs are the best VCRs. Those things do not die. I have VCRs from the 90s at work. I bought ones in the 2000s that died. They are, those things are gold. I cried when he destroyed that fucking thing.
And the remote, too.
Oh, my God. You might as well have taken, like, emptied my bank account and flushed it down a fucking toilet. Like, that's what it felt like when I saw that. That's a working VCR. Well, I assume maybe it wasn't working. Maybe that's why he destroyed it. But
yeah.
Either way, those things are gold. Can't destroy VCRs. I literally have like five stockpiled in my attic just in case. All right. Anyway, so he drills Raven with the VCR. I'm 40, by the way. Funk works over a cactus with a shovel, and it's just weapons madness right now. Funk and Tommy spend a couple minutes just battering each other with all sorts of weapon shots, whatever they can find. Funk hits the ref with a dustpan. Raven is busted wide open. Funk hits him in the balls with a golf club. Tommy uses a cheese grater on Raven's cut until Jack saves him. Cactus and Raven take over with their weapons insanity. The crowd chants EC fucking W. They're loving the violence. Cactus and Raven use a chain to clothesline Tommy, and then Jack uses a knife to stab Terry's arm. Raven DDTs Tommy. We all head back out. Dreamer eats the railing and is shoved back inside. Cactus slices Funk's arm with a knife and then jams it in Funk's head over and over. Really fucking gross. And honestly, one of the most violent brawls we've seen in ECW, pushing the ante quite a bit. Maybe since the heyday of the Rotten Boys. Raven and Jack collide in a clothesline attempt, and Tommy DDTs Raven and puts, but Jack smashes him with a street sign. Jack takes his shirt off and puts it on Tommy's face, and now he has another one underneath with Eric Bischoff's face spray painted on it that says, "Forgive me, Uncle Eric," written on the back. Jack then pantomimes WCW letters in the air to celebrate his big moment. The bloody Tommy's emboldened because he sees the shirt on his face and slugs away, but Jack hammers right back. Dreamer then puts Eric's face over Jack and pummels it. That was a funny spot. Tommy then destroys Cactus with a disgusting chair shot. Outside, Funk slams a shopping cart across Raven's back. Just gross. More weapon shots as all four guys are moving really slow now. Cactus has a double-arm DDT on a chair. Funk covers, but there's no ref. And so much blood is just pouring as we move along. Raven dives over the top into Tommy as the crowd chants for Vader randomly. I think it was Vader. Did you guys catch that?
I don't know.
No.
Okay. Maybe I missed something. Maybe it was something else. Raven covers Funk and Jack counts three for him, but Joey says that doesn't count. They keep brawling with weapons as Jack uses a fan's crutch on Tommy. Fonzie and Taz show up as Fonzie counts as Cactus covers Funk, but Funk kicks out. Fonzie and Taz then beat up Funk until Tommy makes a save. He stares at Taz. Joey says Tommy and Taz are best friends. Everyone's Tommy's best friend, by the way. Anytime Tommy gets turned on, it's his best friend. Raven knocks down Tommy as Taz and Fonzie now leave. We go back to the brawling as Dreamer hits a leaping DDT on Raven. He follows with another one, then pile drives him on a chair. Tommy kicks Cactus outside. Funk covers Raven and picks up the win. Tommy gets his victory, but he still has not pinned Raven as Terry gets the cover. Cactus comes back in. He kicks Funk down. DDT's Tommy. Stevie comes in too, but Tommy super kicks him and then wraps barbed wire on Raven's head. Cactus chokes Funk with a cable wire as we just keep rolling. Raven then knocks Tommy down, headbutts his balls with the wire crown on. The bloodied Raven then does his pose with the crown on, giving a lot of Jesus vibes as Stevie's just in shock. Cactus and Funk brawl down the aisle with Jack hitting with chair shots, and that wraps us up. Just insane, intense brawling. This is like the extreme end of ECW. When people talk about ECW just being weapons and violence, like this is the shit they're talking about. On the other side of the hard-hitting mat action we saw earlier and otherwise, the hatred and heat is poured through everyone, filling every shot. So much blood everywhere, but nothing was settled, really. Taz getting involved maybe set something up, his longtime good close friend Tommy Dreamer. A lot of this was gratuitous weapon stuff, a little flow. But the story and hate really enticed it. And I mean, I thought it was good, but limited too because of the style. Like, you can only go so far when it's just like walk brawling with weapons, to me anyway. I need something more semblance of a story. But Raven with the crown at the end was great in a wild scene with him basically standing there as a savior over everyone. So Johnny, I went 3.25. Again, I kind of have a cap on where I go with these types of matches. So I think we saw maybe the best of this type with that Pitbulls, Raven, and Richard stuff. You know, we talked about at our last big event that was just insanity, but more of a story to it. Whereas this was just how sick can we get, which if you up the ante enough can be entertaining, but again, to me has its limits.
Yeah, 3 stars. You pretty much covered all the weapons, the VCRs, the golf clubs, the cheese graters. I think you missed the toilet seat when Raven had the put the toilet seat on Funk. Otherwise, the finishes are getting repetitive with like there can never be like a happy ending. We can never have like can't one show end with nope. Like Dreamer and Funk celebrating. It's always got to be Raven's got to get the heat back at the end after losing the match and he's always got to get Tommy down that one last time. So that is becoming a little frustrating and repetitive. But that's the only minor complaint.
Yeah, I mean, I think you guys have pretty much hit on it. Cactus and his crazy shirts, unexpected there.
Forgive me, Uncle Eric.
Forgive me, Uncle Eric. Okay. you know, I'm into the blood. I'm into the violence and the weapons. So it's all good. You know, I'm totally fine watching this. I don't, you know, this is going to be Terry Funk's last match, obviously. So it's
yeah, very, he may never wrestle again, right?
And he may never again. It's a very legendary, important match in the history of wrestling. So I hate that Tommy did not get a pin. Kind of sucks that Funk got that, but whatever. Tommy with his face covered in blood, like doing like leaping DDTs and shit is pretty awesome. So I'm at 3 stars on this one as well. I really loved Cactus with Funk choking him with like the cable. It looked like his fucking neck was just gonna like just slit right open. I mean, it was so gross and awesome.
Yeah, I mean, I agree there with Johnny too about not letting them just be able to kind of have the moment. Like, we're going to get a million more beatdowns, I'm sure, right, with these guys. Like, if it is Funk's retirement, in quotes, or one of his final, like, let him have the moment. I guess maybe they wanted to get the crown beat. Like, that's kind of an infamous moment. So maybe they just wanted him with the crown standing tall. And I know the story is always that Tommy can't get one over on him, even when he wins a match. All right, so that wraps us up. Another great show, of course, as always. I felt they delivered overall for another November to remember. Let's hit our awards. Johnny, best match?
The main event, Cactus and Dreamer versus Funk Dreamer.
Okay,
That was your highest?
3?
Yep.
All right, I went with Ray and Psychosis.
Yeah, I'm going to go with that as well.
All right, worst match, I just want Conan, Jason.
LPR versus Stevie.
Broad Bully and Donnie Allen.
The Bubba. All right, best moment, I had 3 tonight. Sabu's return, obviously. Mm-hmm. Fonzie clotheslining Bulo was insane. And then Taz's promo, which solidifies him again as like a top star.
Yeah, the Taz turn to promo.
Taz for sure. Mikey's defense of his title, obviously.
Whatever.
Return of Sabu. The debut of Blue Meanie, obviously. And the retirement of Terry Funk.
All All right, most 90s, I went with all the airbrush shirts we saw tonight, whether it was Blue Mini, Flock of Seagulls. Someone went to the mall, you know, cactuses too. Someone went to the kiosk in the mall and
loaded up.
Just loaded up on the 2-for-1 deal they had going on. So,
also, Todd's tracksuit.
Yes.
In one of the front rows, there was a guy that was standing up during the whole main event. He had a Tom Barrasso Penguins jersey.
Oh, there you go.
Hockey jersey. Very big in the 90s, yeah.
All right, stock rising, I had a decent amount. I had Bubba Ray, I had Sabu, I had the Eliminators, Scorpio, Taz, and Cactus Jack shirts.
Sandman, too?
Sandman, yes.
But you covered everybody, yeah.
Yeah.
Stock falling as usual, associates for me, Alan, Bully, Jason, and I put Public Enemy in here. I wasn't super into them on this show. I felt like you could feel the change. And to me, they are feeling almost a little relic-y. Like, I don't know if it's because they're... It's not like they've come and gone. Like, they've consistently been on everything since we started watching. So, maybe it's just in my head. I don't know. But, like, I don't know. They feel like they're just doing kind of the same act. And, like, there's been no development from them. And it's just kind of the same thing over and over. So, like, I'm seeing Pit Bulls and Eliminators. And I just feel like the tag division is kind of stepping up. I'd like to see something different now.
Yeah, agreed. Usually they're in like a blood feud with another tag team, and this is just obviously it wasn't a blood feud when they had the comedy dance off before the match. So.
If only another tag team would come in soon and save us all.
You never know who could be on the door, ready to knock it down.
Yeah, the what the gangsters have been must have been locked up at this time.
Something tells me we'll see them again soon.
Yeah.
All right, final grade. I thought this was a great show. I don't think it's as great as the top shows we've seen, but I think that's because ECW has set the bar so high for the ship. We saw an all-timer recently, and this to me is just a great show, not an all-timer, because I don't think it had that. All-time classic match. As much as I loved Ray and Psychosis, we still didn't get that like vintage top-level ECW match. We did have a bunch of moments, but the problem is, again, and it sucks. I'm trying not to ding them for this, but they have so many awesome moments. I'm not saying we become numb to them, but like at some point, it almost you need epic ones to pass over the great moments. Like because every show has great moments. So. It's just getting harder and harder to factor those in depending on level of what they mean. So anyway, all that is to say I went 7 out of 10 on this show.
7.5.
How did you end up with a higher grade? I feel like you had every match lower. We're all over the place. Yeah.
I'm not big on the mat on the stars. I'm not a star guy.
All right.
Star guy. All right. Well,
it's like my best match was 3 stars, but I went 10 out of 10. Yeah.
I said 7.5.
I know.
4-star matches on the show. I feel like I'm probably in some range as well.
All right. Well, this was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed watching this and living it with you guys as well, just like we do every show here. All right. So we got our next episode will air in 2 weeks' time. It will be our final of 2020, which has been a great year for this show. I know. It's crazy, right?
Wow.
But it's been a great year for this show. I know it's been a challenging year across the board, but our show has been a lot of fun, and I've looked forward to doing it once a month with you guys, twice a month with you guys, and really banging these out and watching the material. So I'm excited to wrap the year with you, and we're pretty much going to be wrapping 95 or close to it. We have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 weeks of TV to cover on our next episode. Of course, much of it is recapping what we just talked about tonight, so we'll be able to cruise through some of them, I'm sure. And that will set us up for the final show of 1995, Holiday Hell, which we'll bring you in the beginning of 2021. So, 95 has been an amazing year of ECW. We've talked about it, and we look forward to closing it out. Lots going on at the North-South Connection Podcast Network each and every day, whether it's wrestling, sports, and pop culture. Football fans, obviously we have this week in the NFL. Johnny, you want to talk about that real quick?
Well, we're getting a lot of buzz with all the goings on the field and off the field. And, we're getting a lot of nice feedback with Senior, Roger, and Ryder, the four-man crew. And we really appreciate it. We get a lot of, a lot of messages during the week saying, you know, we can't wait to hear you talk about this and that. So, and it's a fun time too. And yeah, poor Roger calls out an hour every week to get it in. So we make sure there's no bye weeks and we get it in weekly.
And he usually drops.
It's still your only sports show on the network. I think next year you and a couple of guys should have a fantasy show on, being you know, the different type of sports shows that you guys like fantasy so much.
Okay, we'll see. We'll see. Right now, I mean, it deserves its class of its own. Why would we fuck with it? You know, so it's perfect. But that does drop usually between Wednesday and Friday every week. So, like John says, they don't take a week off, and it's been an interesting season. You guys have covered it really well. All right, well, check out everything else, too, we have to offer here. In addition to those two great shows, of course, we have Wrestling Warzone that alternates with this show every Thursday. We have The Year That Was with Aaron George on Monday, which is an awesome show every other Monday. He watched every WWE pay-per-view, spent 3 years building this project, and has ranked every pay-per-view year, and he brings those to you as he goes through every other week. On Tuesdays, alternate with TNA or Dies is the Ruthlessly Aggressive podcast. Jake Williams rotates in guests. This past week, he had a couple interesting ones. Talked about a couple big episodes of TV, so be sure to peep that if you haven't heard it yet. Plus, No Holds Barred on Saturdays, Shrink Wrapped, The Gang Gets an Always Sunny podcast, Rank and File, so many great shows, Second Print Comics. We appreciate all the support. Twitter, I'm at JT the Pod Guy. Johnny, you are at JADice7?
Seven, yes, sir.
Nailed it. And Jenny's at the Jenny Position. Of course, subscribe to her feed as well, the Jenny Position, on all Podcatcher apps. Rate and review us with everything you do. We appreciate the support. Stay extreme. We'll talk to you in 2 weeks' time.
I had to flip nothing and turn it into something. Hip-hop turns to the future rock when I smash a pumpkin. Commit treason, then I have a reason to hunt you down. It's only right, it's rapping season. Yeah, you with the loud voice, posing like your top choice. Your voice, I make the hearse out of your Rolls Royce. Besides, I got my girl to remember, and I committed that I'll be back in November. Every time I make a run, girl, you turn around and cry. I ask myself why, oh why. See, you must understand, I can't work a 9 to 5. So I'll be gone till November. Then I'll be gone till November. I'll be gone till November. You tell my girl I'll be gone till November. I'll be gone till November. I'll be gone till November. You tell my girl you I'll be gone till November. January, February, March, April, May. I see you crying.